Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, 800-531-3815. Toll free coast to coast, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Comes every week by email. We're now celebrating our fourth year. Actually, we're now in our fifth year of that publication, that weekly publication. We just published our 209th consecutive issue, and the feature article is titled Branding and the Q Factor. So check that out when you get a chance. I had a lot of fun doing the research on that, and it's an article I think you'll find interesting. We've gotten a lot of good response from that. Let me introduce you to our good friend Steve Forbes, ladies and gentlemen. Steve is certainly a friend of yours. He's a great advocate and a great champion for entrepreneurs everywhere. He's editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine. He's CEO of Forbes. You know him also as a former presidential candidate. And as I said, he's our friend and an outstanding member of our Brain Trust. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you, Jim, and congratulations on your anniversary.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I thank you for the part that you played in our success very much, and thank you for being back here on the show this week. Steve, let's talk about some issues that are important, I think, to entrepreneurs everywhere, especially in the United States, and that's Social Security reform. We've got to get a handle on this issue, haven't we?
That's right, because right now, as we all know, we have a pay-as-we-go system. My generation, the baby boomers, as we start to hit retirement in the next decade or so, the system's going to start paying out more money than it's taking in. Europe and Japan, it's much worse than it is in the United States. But the kind of reform we need is to turn this liability into an asset. And the way you do that is by really allowing workers to have the choice, if they wish to do it, to have a part of their payroll tax that now goes to the feds instead go to their own personal retirement accounts. You don't have to put the money in the stock market. It can go in government bonds and bank CDs, and you'd still be far better off than what the system is today.
Steve, do you think that part of the problem with making the conversion from a state-run program to an individual-run program, the problem is not so much that it's a bad idea, it's just that I'm not sure we know how to get there. And still take care of the people who we made promises to. Isn't that where the problem is?
You're exactly right. That's what is holding some people back. But I think we have to realize that Social Security already has an unfunded liability of about $10 or $12 trillion, and I see nothing wrong during a transition. We go from one system to another in the next couple of decades of, going to the markets and borrowing what we need to pay the benefits of those who are on the system or are going to go on the system in the next few years. Since we have the debt anyway, we might as well start to tackle it in a way where in the future, system sound, and you can use part of the payroll tax in the future to pay down what you borrow to make the transition.
So you're saying
it's eminently doable.
You're saying that basically, let's take what we've got right now, let's button it up, seal it up, hermetically seal it, annuitize it, so to speak, so it becomes a little bit more actuarial. Let's don't make any more promises. Let's just stop the promises right now, but maintain those to the people who are depending on it now, and those of us, you and I are both in the baby boomer age and generation, and so there have been promises made to us too. We paid into it now for all these years, so we would be of a little bit. We would probably be part of that promise of that setting aside and buttoning up that old program, and then just starting a parallel universe. Is that what you're thinking about?
In essence, and it is this way. The key to making the transition, Jim, is to make sure you don't take anything away from people who are on the system or about to go on the system. There's no need to take things back. We're a rich nation. We can afford to make this transition. And that way, people where promises, as you say, have been made, those promises can be kept. Mm-hmm. And for younger workers, They have a system that is going to provide them much more, give them real capital. That way it's win-win. You don't have to have this zero-sum, somebody gets hurt, somebody gets help mentality. It can be done in a way where the country comes out ahead.
In the world, according to Steve Forbes, what would that new program look like? Would there be any guarantees, or would it strictly be subject to whatever the market would bear?
I think you have to make guarantees. You have to have, because otherwise you'll never get the change made. You have to guarantee a certain minimum, that, you know, come what may. People are always worried that if they have a new system, something could go dreadfully wrong and they're left with nothing when they reach 65 or 70 or whatever. So you have to have minimal guarantees, peg it to inflation so that you don't end up with nothing in your when you retire. There are ways to do it. There are good thought-out plans on how to do this. Cato Institute has done it. Right. Heritage Foundation has done it.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways to do it. You give guarantees where people, those who don't want to go in the stock market, don't have to go in the stock market. They can have government-guaranteed bonds and the like. There are various ways to deal with people's fears, and that's why, Jim, you have to give people choice. You can't say you're in this system, you're in that system. You have to give people a choice. You want to stay with the old, okay. If you want to go with the new, you can. If people feel they have choice, they'll be much more open to reform than if they feel something's going to be shoved down their throat.
Isn't that the underlying movement, the underlying philosophy emerging and evolving in the 21st century? More and more, we are in what I call the century of the entrepreneur. And when I say that, I mean it less and less every day. I mean it less being a matter of being a business owner. When I say the century of the entrepreneur, I mean the century of individual self-determination. Aren't we moving toward that, and isn't what we're talking about right now an important component of that?
That's right, where benefits and assets that were once owned by the government or controlled by politicians now can be controlled by you. What we're discussing with Social Security is one example. Healthcare is another.
Mm-hmm.
We need real reform there. It's killing small businesses. Leading to more and more uninsured. It's a crazy system the way we finance it, but there are reforms, and I gather you're going to have a Grace Marie Turner on soon to discuss this. There are ways of reforms there where, again, we can have affordable system providing basic coverage without rationing and throwing people out in the gutter.
Stand by, Steve. We're going to take a quick break. By the way, folks, Steve mentioned the Cato Institute. Mike Tanner at Cato.org has done a lot of work and written a lot of things on this issue on Social Security privatization. If you want to check that out there, Cato.org. Steve Forbes is our guest. He and I will be right back after these messages. It's 20 after. Stay with us. Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, celebrating 6 years on the air with our good friend Steve Forbes, editor-in-chief of Forbes Magazine. And folks, I encourage you to go to their website at Forbes.com, F-O-R-B-E-S.com, and check out their website. It's an outstanding site. There's a lot of good information there that you can acquire just by going there, by checking out some of the articles that they post there. And also, I encourage you to check out their publication. And Steve, they can subscribe right there on the website, can't they?
They can indeed, and if they wish to call, they can call 1-800-888-9896. That's 888-9896, and do it that way as well.
Check that out, folks, and it's an outstanding publication, as you know, and it's one of the journalistic fixtures and great assets of our nation. And so, but that's Forbes.com. Steve, on the website there, and folks, this is just an example of some of the outstanding coverage that they have. On the website, there's an article there by Janet Novak called The $99 Billion Tax Compliance Bill. And in that bill, she talks about how much we spend every year just in complying, not paying the tax. And this doesn't even include what she says. It doesn't include the $10 billion the IRS spends to collect our tax, but just in tax compliance, she says, is $99 billion. It's just incredible, isn't it?
it is incredible. And you realize how complex the tax code is and how much it costs to collect the thing. Realize literally there are tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars that would be freed up if you put in something like a flat tax or simplified the code.
Well, that was one of the big planks in your presidential campaign, was the flat tax, wasn't it?
That's right. And I think support is still building for it. If the president, after the elections next year, pushes for tax simplification, I think the country would embrace it quickly. Other countries are doing it. As you know, the Russians have done it. The Ukrainians have done it. Other Europeans have done it.
Hong Kong has done it.
China's considering doing it.
We can't let the Russians get ahead of us on tax reform.
Can you believe it? They have a simpler code than we do. Their highest rate now for personal incomes is 13%.
Well, here's the way I look at the Russians, Steve. As you know, one of the problems they had was they didn't even know how to collect taxes. They had no system to collect taxes. And so here's what they did. They looked around. They said, okay, we have a clean slate here. We can do whatever we want. We have no baggage. So let's put one in place. Huh, which one would be the best? Oh, flat tax. Let's do that one.
That's right. And it's worked extremely well. Collections are good. Compliance is good. And as you say, this is a country that's had no tradition of income taxes. And the thing is working beautifully.
Well, we've got to move toward that because think of what do we got, a $500 billion deficit. If we could institute this, think about and I think these numbers are conservative. It's $99 billion, and folks, that includes what we pay for it to our tax pros. That includes the time. Let me give you another number that was in Janet Novak's piece at Forbes.com. 3.2 billion hours, 3.2 billion hours of our time we spend on complying with federal income tax.
Isn't that wild? And if you just a minimum wage on that, you're talking almost $20 billion.
Exactly, just at minimum wage, and it's ridiculous. And we've got to do something about this. Do you think this will be a part of Mr. Bush's campaign for 2004?
I think so. I think at least they'll do the concept of simplification, and I hope that they go beyond rhetoric and make it an issue and let the Democrats come out and try to one of their candidates defend this code. I'd love to see them do it.
Steve, are you still bullish about 2004?
I am. I think even though we're not going to have the growth rates we had in the third quarter, that's not going to happen.
Thank goodness.
We are going to get solid growth next year, 4-5%. It's going to be a good year.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that. And you know, another thing, some other stars are aligning right now that I'm kind of excited about, and that's Japan. Japan's acting like they may be coming out of the doldrums. If we can get that second largest economy on the planet going again, that could be good news for a lot of people, couldn't it?
It could. And there, the key thing is their own central bank. Is whether it's going to supply enough money, whether it's going to print enough money. And, you always wonder, recent months they've been starting to print more. You know, it's like a car. You don't have sufficient fuel, the thing's going to stall. And I hope they keep pumping the fuel because this car badly needs to move.
Steve, I've got about a minute left in our visit. What are some things that you would tell If you have small business owners sitting in front of you listening to your words, what would you like to tell them to do? What would you encourage them to do to get ready for 2004?
I think they've got to look at health care for 2004. Obviously, be prepared for an expansion. We haven't had one for 3 years, so success is sometimes hard to appreciate. But when they do start to expand, you've said it, I've said it, everyone says it, but it's very hard to lose. It's easy to lose sight of when you're going well. That is cash flow. Mm-hmm. Never take your eye off of cash flow.
Profit is the queen of business, but cash is king, isn't it?
Cash is king. You can have all the book profits you want, but that's not going to put money in the bank.
That's right. Steve Forbes, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your steadfastness and your service to our country and to small business owners.
Jim, thank you, and you continue your great work.
Thank you. Steve Forbes, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget Forbes.com. It's an outstanding resource. I encourage you to check it out. Thanks, Steve. See you later.
Take care.
Got to go for just a few minutes. I'll be right back with Cherie Carter-Scott after these messages. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.